The UN says Russia is not allowing aid workers into occupied dam destruction areas where civilians are in dire need of food and drinking water.
This is yet another example of the utter disregard by Russia to anything that has something to do with the international humanitarian law, with the UN principles, and with principles of civilized way of living.
Plus, still in the early stages of what's to come, the environmental impacts of the Kakhovka Dam collapse are tragic.
The Black Sea water is contaminated due to the flood. All beaches in Odessa are closed.
And later in the program, a California photographer raises hundreds of thousands of dollars for Ukraine humanitarian aid. Today is Monday, June 16th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Lori London in Washington. Ukrainian rescue workers are continuing to travel into Russian-controlled areas to help civilians flee the floodwaters from a collapsed dam in the Kherson region. Associated Press correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
Small boats carrying volunteers have shuttled across from Ukrainian-held areas to evacuate desperate civilians stuck on rooftops, in attics and elsewhere amid the deluge. Flood evacuee Katerina Krupich said the flooding was like nothing she had seen before. I got out of the window, sat on the roof, and I witnessed a truly apocalyptic scene. Houses were floating by. Katerina was rescued with her family and taken to the recaptured Ukrainian city of Kherson. Others, however, were not so lucky. Some were killed while trying to flee the floods by Russian fire. Vyacheslav Dementyev is a friend of someone killed by the Russians while fleeing. He says rescue boats were allowed into Russian-controlled areas, but once they were full, they were attacked. I'm Karen Chamas.
The death toll from flooding following the destruction of the dam has risen to at least 16 in Ukraine, according to Kyiv officials, while Russian authorities said at least 29 people have died in territories that Moscow controls. Edward Baran with Reuters has more.
The breaching of the Kakhovka Dam on June 6 unleashed floodwaters across a large area of land in southern Ukraine and in Russian-occupied parts of Ukraine, destroying farmland and cutting off supplies to civilians. More than 3,600 people have been evacuated from the flooded areas in the Kherson and Mykolaiv regions, while 31 people were still missing and some 1,300 houses remained flooded. That's according to Ukraine's Interior Ministry. Here in Holopristan, a city in Russian-controlled Ukraine, volunteers were seen pumping flood water out of homes on Saturday. This woman says her only hope is God. We don't put our hopes in any of the authorities, she says. Ukraine accuses Russia of blowing up the Soviet-era dam under Russian control since early days of its invasion in 2022. A team of international legal experts assisting Ukraine's prosecutors in their investigation said in preliminary findings on Friday it was highly likely the collapse in Ukraine's Kherson region was caused by explosives planted by Russians. The Kremlin accuses Kyiv of sabotaging the hydroelectric dam, which held a reservoir the size of the US Great Salt Lake, to cut off a key source of water for Crimea and distract attention from a, quote, faltering counteroffensive against Russian forces.
Edward Baran reporting for Reuters. The investigation continues, and no official cause of the Kakhovka Dam's destruction has yet to be announced. But according to exclusive drone photos and information obtained by the Associated Press, Russia had the means, motive, and opportunity to bring down the Ukrainian dam that collapsed earlier this month while under Russian control. I spoke with European Commission spokesperson Peter Strano for analysis.
It seems like it's sort of a part of a broader pattern of attacks that continue to be documented in this war on water, on critical infrastructure, on pipelines. What are your main concerns about what we're seeing right now with this latest situation? And of course, Russia's not letting aid in to assist the people that are impacted by this flood on the Russian-occupied side.
The whole situation around the Novokakhovka Dam only illustrates the extent of the brutality and illegitimacy of the Russian aggression against Ukraine. For us, the first thing to say is that if there was no aggression and invasion by Russia against Ukraine, we would not be discussing this issue nowadays. The blowing up of the dam, for us, it's very obvious that this is the responsibility of the Russia. This is on the territory controlled and occupied by Russia. Russians, when they started to occupy this territory, mined the dam and the surroundings of the dam. So they bear ultimate responsibility for what happened. This is underlining what kind of atrocities the Russian invading forces are committing in Ukraine. And what happened with the Nova Kakhovka dam is actually bringing the level of atrocities and escalation to completely new level. Because through these consequences, through the humanitarian impact of this and long-term impact on this, Russia only proves to the entire world how reckless it is in its war against the Ukrainian people. And of course, the European position, European Union's position is very clear. There will be accountability. So those responsible for this will be held accountable, and the European Union will spare no effort in making sure that the justice is done. And you can also see the accompanying behavior by Russia by preventing the UN to come and to provide the humanitarian assistance on the ground, on the side which is controlled by the Russian occupying forces. This is yet another example of the utter disregard by Russia to anything that has something to do with the international humanitarian law, with the UN principles, and with principles of civilized way of living and behaving.
The destruction of the dam, one of the people on the team investigating said that this is literally an object that's indispensable to the survival of civilian population.
Absolutely. The dam was important from many points of view. I mean, for the energy production, for the agricultural production, for supplies of people with water. It was important also in the connection with the nuclear power plant in Zaporozhye. So it was very important. It was not by chance that the dam was there and that the dam was constructed. And the level of destruction it brought to the wider region and to the human lives around the blowing up of this dam, it's simply huge, and it's bringing the level of atrocities committed by Russia to completely new level, and the international community should react to it. And not to mention the risk apart from the ecological risk, the risk linked to the mines which were put in the area surrounding the dam and now taken by the floodwaters everywhere and freely floating and contaminating the land around the area. So this is really, really completely new level of atrocities committed by Russia in the context of its anyway already atrocious and illegal aggression against Ukraine and its people.
And you mentioned there will be accountability. We don't even know when this is going to end. We've heard of numerous peace efforts from several countries, including the delegation of African leaders that came. It didn't seem like that resulted in anything because Russia doesn't want to pull out of Ukraine, and Ukraine's not going to give up their sovereignty and their land. So where do you see this going?
And this is exactly the reason why we need to see Ukraine to win in its defense against the Russian aggression. And the European Union will stand by Ukraine and will support Ukraine in many ways, financial, economic, in military, in political and diplomatic way, to make sure that Ukraine wins this battle for its freedom and for its survival and restores its sovereignty and territorial integrity within its internationally recognized borders. This is very important. Only when Ukraine wins this very justified war from the Ukrainian point of view, because they are fighting a defensive war against an aggression, only then it will be possible to speak about stability and security in Europe. And then after Ukraine wins this war, we really need to make sure and continue with all the efforts that those responsible for this aggression, for all the atrocities committed during this aggression, will be held to account, and that the justice will be done.
European Commission spokesperson Peter Strano. Ukraine said Monday it had driven Russian forces from an eighth village in its two-week-old counteroffensive, a settlement on a heavily fortified part of the front line near the most direct route to the country's Azov Sea coast. Meanwhile, fighting also continues in the disaster zone following the destruction of the Kakhovka Dam. I talked about that with Anna Chernikova in Kyiv, who provided an update on the situation.
The most intensified fightings remain in the Donetsk region and in the Kherson region as well. So we talk about south and eastern front lines. As you mentioned, the Kherson region is still coping with this terrible results of the explosion of the Kakhovka Dam, and Ukrainian authorities confirm that big water is almost gone. So there is almost not that many settlements remain under the water. So we're now about five on the Ukrainian controlled side of Kherson region and 17 on the occupied side of the Kherson region. However, Russian forces intensifying the shelling of Kherson and Kherson region and the city of Kherson itself, and almost every day and every night there are reports of the shelling of the fire. So this definitely creates additional complications for evacuation efforts and for bringing all the facilities back to more or less normal after the big water. So for the moment, we can see that the south front line remains very active and very intense. Additionally, Ukrainian forces had certain little advances in the Zaporizhia region. However, it's yet too early to talk about certain results of the counteroffensive because it more looks like some, you know, pointed operations, counteroffensive operations, and it looks like this is just a preparation for something wider. So let's follow this and see what's going to happen in the next weeks.
The situation with the dam explosion and the flooding, the repercussions from this are going to be felt for a long time. And from what I'm hearing, just now they're starting to see some of the early signs of how bad of an ecological catastrophe this is.
And the effects on the Black Sea are already seen. For instance, the Black Sea water is contaminated due to the flood. We already have the fact reported that all beaches in Odessa are closed due to another fact that the water in the sea is not salt enough, which causes the death of fish and marine life in general, and this causes health risks both for people and for marine ecosystems. Unfortunately, it could be that this is not only gonna end at the Ukrainian part of the Black Sea, but this definitely can go further. And in general, Black Sea already had a very serious effect due to this disaster. And unfortunately, experts say that it might take decades even to get ecosystem of the Black Sea back to normal. Like in Odessa, people just like walk along the beach and they post videos of dead animals, parts of the buildings, like fridges, sofas. And you can imagine there were quite a lot of cemeteries, like human cemeteries on that territory as well. And who knows what else they're going to find. It's really, really bad.
Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. In Brussels, NATO held a second day of defense talks focused on Ukraine Monday. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg.
Today, we will prepare the ground for the NATO summit in Vilnius, where leaders will take decisions to further strengthen our deterrence and defense. We will review our updated plans for the defense of Europe.
The meeting comes just under a month before President Joe Biden and his counterparts will gather for a key summit in Lithuania on Ukraine. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. Flooding caused by the Kakhovka Dam explosion could be felt as far away as the Mykolaiv region, some 50 kilometers away. The Inhulets River spilled over and flooded a number of villages, Vasilivka among them. Today, locals are starting to come back to their homes. Yelizaveta Krotik has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Located some 50 kilometers from the Kakhovka Dam, residents of the village of Vasilivka still feel the effects.
We had water over here. Everything was afloat. The bed, everything. It stinks in here now. We had laminate here. Just finished renovating the place.
The day after the water receded, 54-year-old Anatoly Matsuta returned to his home. He lives about 500 meters from the Inhulets River.
The water started coming in on June 7th, and on June 8th, we headed to our relatives in Pavlika. Only managed to take the essentials with us.
Pensioner Natalia Tkach lives close to the river as well. Her house was also flooded.
When we saw the water creeping closer to us, my husband and I decided it was time to get away. We took what we could, some clothing, some groceries, packed it all in the car and headed to our daughter's place. She lives further away from the river.
All the furniture in Katya's house is wet. The rooms are filled with debris.
I don't know where to start. We have cattails inside the house, clay, silt, it's everywhere in the house. The furniture is ruined.
The village of Vasilievka was occupied by Russian forces from February 24th to November 11th, 2022. For some time, locals lived under constant shelling.
From the first day of the occupation to the very last day of it, my husband and I were here. And then the Russians left. We were so happy. We greeted our soldiers. We had three rockets fall near our houses. We've lived through a very tough time.
And the tough times haven't ended. This time, it was an unwanted invasion of water, leaving residents here to contend with damaged and destroyed homes and land. For Yelizaveta Krotek in Vasilievka, Ukraine, NRI's VOA News.
The trial of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny on new charges of extremism took place behind closed doors on Monday. The media was excluded from proceedings against President Vladimir Putin's most prominent and vocal opponent that could extend his prison term by decades. We hear more now from Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma.
The session took place at a maximum security penal colony in Melikhovo, east of Moscow, where Navalny's serving a 9-year sentence for fraud and contempt of court, charges he says are politically motivated. Navalny, who exposed official corruption and organized major anti-Kremlin protests, was arrested in January 2021 upon returning to Moscow after recuperating in Germany from nerve agent poisoning that he blamed on the Kremlin. Navalny, wearing his prison garb, looked gaunt at the session, but spoke emphatically about the weakness of the state's case and gestured energetically. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
With the war in Ukraine now in its second year, thousands of Ukrainian refugees are making longer-term plans to stay in Poland. As part of World Refugee Day coverage, VOA visited a refugee center run by business people and nonprofit organizations on the outskirts of Warsaw that's a temporary home to as many as 1,000 people. Lizia Bakaletz reports.
This building on the edge of Warsaw once served as a global expo exhibit hall. Since March 2022, it has become a refugee center for Ukrainians. 60-year-old Tayana Lada has lived here for about a year.
We bought this one from Zaporizhia, my cat's favorite toy. Her name is Kuzia.
Kuzia the cat and a collection of silver rings, the main treasures Lada has brought from her hometown, Zaporizhia. She decided to flee after Russian forces shelled her neighborhood. Tayana Lada remembers that day.
A rocket landed next to the house. It was almost 5 a.m. And in principle, it is not scary to die. It's scary when you get mutilated.
The refugee center where Tayana lives is private. It is financed by Polish and Ukrainian business people and non-profit organizations. Here she has as many as 1,000 neighbors, the majority women and children, all live in this huge hall. At the beginning, cots lay near each other. Several months ago, short plywood dividers were built. This is the only privacy refugees can count on. Doors and walls are prohibited for fire safety. Tayana Lada,
this is our home now, maybe, for a long time.
There are washing machines and showers. Each aisle has charging stations. The dining hall is in the next room. Olena Kondratyuk from Vinnytsia is in charge here.
Three of my kitchen team members are from Crimea. They fled to Russia. Four of them are from Donetsk and two are from Zaporizhia. There is nowhere for them to return until the war ends.
At first, Kondratyuk planned to rent an apartment in Warsaw. She paid for a room in Ukraine. It was the last of her savings. But the landlord stopped picking up the phone when she arrived in Poland. At the railway station, volunteers recommended this center. Olena Kondratyuk describes her first day in the center.
At the time I arrived, we had two halls, wholly filled. It was like this, a bed next to a bed. There were about 2,000 people. Children were screaming, dogs and cats.
Fewer people are in the center now, but up to 40 people can still come in a day. Everyone is registered and issued a special badge. Next, a person gets a bed and all household items. Often people arrive with only the most necessary items. For children, there is a makeshift school. Inna Zakharchenko is a teacher at the elementary school.
In the elementary school, we have 23 students from 1st to 4th grade. We work according to the program of the Ukraine school. We comply with all norms and all types of work as we learned in Ukraine.
Zakharchenko is a teacher and lives in the center as well. She and her daughter fled from Novakakhovka. She says she finds consolation in teaching here.
For me,
this is an opportunity to get out of bed because I fell into depression. I had a feeling that life is over for me.
Many of the center's residents share those feelings. Volunteers try to help them to find a job or better accommodation if they can afford it. But most cannot. Some are dreaming of returning home, while others have come to accept that this may never happen. Lesia Bakales for VOA News, Warsaw.
A California photographer has raised more than $200,000 in humanitarian aid for Ukraine. Jason Perry has been volunteering for Ukraine since the start of Russia's invasion. He collects donations and clothing for civilians and medications for combat teams. Anna Kostuchenko spoke with Perry.
25-year-old Anastasia Mutsey has been a combat medic with the International Legion since March 2023. And while she helps her comrades, she risks her life every day. Recently, she had a chance to catch up with her friend and United States volunteer from California, photographer Jason Perry.
It is so important to feel that you are not alone, to know there are people who are collecting funds to help.
Californian photographer Jason Perry has been volunteering and helping Ukraine for over a year. He met Mutsey through her sister, Veronica Mutsey, who is the head of a charity foundation in the Netherlands.
I found Zeilen van Vrijheid out of the Netherlands, and I asked them if they needed help driving ambulances to Ukraine. And I told them, you know, who I am and what I do, and they said, yes, come along.
A San Francisco local, Perry is a fourth-generation photographer. And for over a year, Perry's many acquaintances have helped raise funds for Ukraine. During one of his visits this May, Perry brought more than $200,000 worth of aid.
What did you bring?
Tourniquets, coats, thermal base layers, like raincoats. I don't know, yeah, big box of tourniquets. Some other small medical items. I brought some things for Nastia because she's a combat medic.
Perry has seen some of his friends die here. Losses like this only motivate Perry to keep helping Ukraine, he says.
People simply don't know what to do. They know that there's bad things happening here. They know that it's really sad. They know that it's important, but they don't know how to help.
As he goes back to California, Perry plans to organize an exhibition of his photos from Ukraine so that more people can see what war is through the lens of his camera. Anna Kostuchenko for VOA News, Kharkiv Region, Ukraine.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com and on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Lori London.
This is the voice. of America, Washington, D.C.